Greetings to the crew. This is your Nev, once again in the mailroom, recording on July 23rd. Had some good response to this new feature, so I'll continue with these oral responses to your email and see if I can get back to some kind of current status with the mail that's coming in. I'll start first with a message from Valentina. She's in Serbia, in the eastern part of Serbia, very close to the border with Bulgaria and the Bulgarian capital of Sofia. She writes some reflections, some really stabbing reflections about the Bhairavi shift, which we entered a couple of days ago. Oh, to be more precise, she makes reference to something I said in a commentary about the Bhairavi shift, something I said about anger. And she links it to a dream she had of a cat that had crystal claws, reminding her of my description of Kali recruiting her warriors by stabbing them with a crystal knife. And she writes concerning that dream, quote, "It is connected with transpersonal rage. I think she induced that in me. It was very helpful when you described hate as sober and cool state of being, because that is the same state I find myself sometimes. Cool, very cool and crystal clear mind, oriented to kick or kill someone. But I have never defined that state as hate, because it is almost playful, scary but beautiful, elegant and intelligent state of being. I like that coolness very much, but I do not know when or will it arise within me at all. What initiates that? When people lose last sense for respect, when they broke last barrier of sanity, when they lose measures, ... And she adds, "So I almost forgot that state, and then it appeared within me in April in the form of a black panther, big time." So that's Val writing. She makes her apologies at the beginning of her letter for her handling of English. She says sometimes she gets to the state where she can hardly even write in Serbian. I think it's brilliant what she writes, and there's nothing at all wrong with her English. It speaks of a visceral truth and a visceral lucidity. I'm sure you can all relate to that in one way or another. When she says, when people lose last sense for respect, when they broke last barrier of sanity, when they lose measures, I can translate her Serbian there, her Serbian-based English. I believe she means when they lose the measure of things, the measure of their own behavior, and when they lose their sense of limits. This is a really good question, and it's a question that comes up every year in the Bhairavi shift. How to stand up to the human condition in view of all you see around you, you know. People have lost their sense of respect for each other, for the earth. The barriers of sanity, the parameters of sanity are broken. They've lost the sense of the proper measure of anything, be it love, truth, anything you name. And so this is very difficult to face, and it brings up a certain kind of rage, and it brings up the question of where and how to direct that rage. So every Bhairavi shift is yet another lesson in those issues. And we're at the beginning of one right now. It could be one of the most interesting you'll ever see in your lifetime, and the most challenging, and let's hope the most productive. For my own part, I would just add that among the elements of challenge that come up in a Bhairavi shift, there is one that I find most excruciating. It concerns the question of respect, which Val indicates here, or Vanya, I should say. I think that's her name, her nickname. Respect, and also self-respect. A problem that I've had in my personal relationships over the last 3 or 4 years is that I've fallen into a syndrome. I guess you could say it's kind of a snare that I lay for myself. And in this syndrome, I show people more respect than they show themselves. I respect them more than they respect themselves. I would say that among the massive psychological, moral, emotional, and mental damage done to the human species at this point in the experiment, there is one outstanding factor that is extremely troubling, and that is that people have lost their self-respect. I don't think that the general public could have reached such a level of degradation in what they eat, in what they consume by way of food and by way of information, so-called, and by way of entertainment and by way of literature and culture. Consumers consuming substances that are of no value, that have no nutritive value to body, soul, or spirit. How could the general mass of humanity reach this state if they had any self-respect? When you have self-respect, you don't let yourself go physically. You love your body and you respect it as a precious instrument, which is what it is. It's not just your instrument either. It's an instrument of the earth, of the goddess, and even of the aeons. We respect that. Don't let it go. Treat it well. Keep it in good shape. And I think that the horrific lack of intelligence in our species, which is a tremendous advantage to the perpetrators, goes hand in hand, complements very closely the lack of respect. So this is a huge problem because naturally we're faced the question of how can we see some impact of the Gaian navigation experiment and the awakening of the planetary animal mother in the world at large? How can we ourselves impact the people around us? In many cases, it's almost impossible. They are really lost in the sauce, as Micaiah says. Love that phrase. They are really plunged into the zombie apocalypse. And I would say from my experience that what we call respect is a touchstone to human communication and to human contact. When I come to you in true respect and I touch you in the place of your self-respect, something real happens. But I have to say, I have tried to touch people there, and where their self-respect is completely destroyed, and all they have is no self-respect at all, or some phony, faked and fraudulent kind of self-respect, or some narcissistic substitute for self-respect. And without self-respect, there can be no respect for others. And without no respect for others, there can be no contact and communication. And without contact and communication, how are we, who are conscious instruments of her dreaming and her awakening, going to have an impact on anybody at all? Well, it's a good question. So thanks a lot, Vanya, for triggering those Bhairavi reflections. Next we jump to South America, I think. Here's a message from Pedro of North Vortex. Pedro, by the way, has a blog in which he's developing Spanish language transmission of Planetary Tantra and Kala Tantra. He's one of a number of my Spanish-speaking allies that I call my Spaniels. I made some attempt a while back to pull them together into kind of a team so they would all be on the same page and could work toward the development of propagating Planetary Tantra in the Spanish language. So I need some help organizing that, as I do with a number of other aspects of PT right now and the Gaia Navigation Experiment. I think what I'll do in the next crew notes is just make a list of calling for volunteers, sort of organize a couple of projects, the Spanish language platform being one of them. Here's an email from Shelley on my remarks about interviews and suggesting that maybe there's a crew member in PR who would be willing to assist you in vetting some of these interviewers for you, so that it turns out if you continue to do interviews, you can actually enjoy doing them. So I have to sort out the interview question here sooner or later, and I welcome any suggestions and help you might offer on that. Long email here from Onomi, or Onomi, I don't know how to pronounce that name, African name. Very, very long. I can't really comment on it here except as to share with you her views on the simulcast idea. She writes, I've been anticipating something like Channel 16 for a very long time. If we make this leap, the ramifications are huge. It means the technology grid will go down and there will be a means not only for an advanced communication system, but this potentially could enter the slipstream of human consciousness and engender a new approach to technology in general. Channel 16 is an immense part of correction. And then she notes, I'm going to acquire a stash of psilocybin to use during the lunar occultations of Jupiter. I think this will speed the plot along. I recommend those who can do the same, end quote. Well, that is a wonderful idea. I would really like to do that myself if I could get my hands on some psychoactive plant or psychoactive tool. It would certainly amp up the process of working with Channel 16 simply because it would enhance the listening capacity and it would clear the NLP circuits. So that's a marvelous suggestion. Psilocybin mushrooms would do as well as the laboratory synthesis, or perhaps better, I would imagine. I've got a note from Leslie Joy, regarding the Pinball Wizard. You know, I was never a follower of The Who or any of those groups, and I've never listened to that kind of music during the time that it was popular. But I recall there was a big deal about this rock opera called Tommy, and it turns out that Tommy was a deaf, blind, and dumb kid who played the pinball. And as Leslie Joy reminds me here in her email, he played by the sense of smell. Well, isn't that interesting? I've certainly had an augmentation of my sense of smell lately. Brief note from Dominique in Peru saying that he's observed these sentiments, or this glitter-like display of color in the sky. That would be in the blue sky of the Andes Mountains at about 7,000 feet, so that's impressive. Here's a mail from Kundry that I actually forwarded from my JLL mail because it refers to or addresses a certain topic that is an inevitable topic and something that's a painful one that all of us are facing. Kundry writes, I lack real human contact. I have no rapport with anyone in my physical reality. And since I've been here, back here in the States, that is, for 7 months, she was here in Spain for a while, it seems to me that the chances of my meeting someone with whom to establish rapport are vanishingly remote. But I will not shut down. I will never shut down. But sometimes the reality of the situation gets to me. The sheer horror of my isolation gets to me. It is not even loneliness. It is horror. I live on a kind of emotional desert island. I am a kind of emotional Robinson Crusoe. Or maybe I am like the last real person in the invasion of the body snatchers. I am surrounded by pod people. And I lack companionship, end quote. I can't say how many of you have written me expressing the same situation, the same angst, you could say. Kundry also sent me a note a week or so ago linking to an article which says that people of high IQ suffer hugely if they don't have anyone around them who is at least 20 points below their IQ. So if you are surrounded by people who are 30, 40, or 50 or more points below your IQ, you're bound to suffer. Now, I don't hold much credence in the IQ intelligence testing system, but symbolically speaking, I think this is a point worth noting. The IQ is simply your intelligence level, and the intelligence that comes with being attuned to the intelligence of the earth and the sentient life of the planet is a high IQ. I've said before, and I said this many years ago, Gaia likes them smart, and she loves to see the intelligence in us because, in fact, in a rather selfish way, she's the one who implanted it there in the first place. If the intelligence is operating at a genius level, as she wishes, then that tells her that the experiment is succeeding. So in the Gaia Navigation Experiment and in Planetary Tantra, you have an opportunity to evolve your intelligence to a more than normal level. And you probably already have a more than normal level of intelligence, or you wouldn't be attracted to these experiments. But then, along with that, comes this sense of isolation. At the same time, we are all connected. There's another message coming up here that someone sent just yesterday about the fact that although we are isolated, we are all connected in the Gaia Navigation Experiment, and perhaps that's the way it needs to be right now while the initial conditions of correction are being established. The planetary animal mother needs these solitary outposts here and there across the world, in Japan, South America, California, in South Africa, in Europe, in Serbia, in the Ukraine. She needs these solitary outposts in order to lay down the essential substructure of the mycelium web that gives rise to the humanity of the next kalpa. So it's a dilemma. It's a paradox. We all suffer, and I do too. Everybody I know. I don't know anybody now who does not suffer to some degree from social, personal, and intimate isolation, including deprivation of touch. And yet at the same time, those of us in this experiment are laying the framework for a higher kind of connection, a higher kind of connective tissue, a new layer of connective tissue spreading across the planet. And in that new layer of connective tissue, when it is established, human solidarity of the kind that we now lack can arise because it will have the proper culture. It will have the proper grounding. So bear those thoughts in mind. They may give some consolation to this deprivation from which we all suffer to one degree or another. Next, a message from Simon down under, who loads the audio files on Gaia Spora for me. He says, quote, love the mailroom, made us feel very connected to each other. There are a lot of crew hungering for this connection. Channel 16 is going to be wild. Amazing the way Vajrayogini brought in the telepathy. It's an interesting observation Simon makes there. It was during the previous shift, which ended on Thursday, the shift of Vajrayogini, or Tantra Mother, that Channel 16 really started to come into definition. Next would be a message from Majel. I know how to pronounce his name now. Talking about some vivid dreams he's had, which were accompanied by electrical shock, gentle and pleasant electrical shocks, and a state of semi-sleep. I'm experiencing this myself recently. First of all, as many of you are reporting, you're having vivid dreams, often connected with power animals, white animals, even white cats, white owls, and so forth. I think we can anticipate that you may be experiencing more of this subliminal or liminal, to be use the correct word, of this liminal state of semi-sleep. As I described a while back, I had a long conversation with an immense orange spider in this liminal state. Also, I think we can anticipate that your dream experiences, both in fully in deep dreaming and also in semi-sleep, are going to be more and more associated with electrical sensations of some kind. One of the pervasive, primary and pervasive features of correction is the electrification of the atmosphere through the animating power of the Aeon Sophia. Now, this is a kind of electrification I would advise you strongly to note that is bound to fundamentally change our notions of electricity. This is not the electrification of our conic devices. It's not the electrification that comes from any kind, that compares, rather, to any kind of human-made form of energy. Rather, it's the real electrification of the living power of the living goddess. And her animal magnetism is becoming so excited in correction that there is no way to tell how far this is going to take us. I believe you will recall that it was just in the spring of this year, in February and March and April, when I proposed the carnal embrace of the Anthropos, that some of you, many of you in fact, began to report intense feelings of physical craving, physical sexual erotic craving, or just a craving for touch, tactile craving. And this tactile craving, which still persists and is incredibly intense at moments, is a symptom that you as an animal, a human animal, are responding to the excitation of the animal magnetism of the earth itself. So Majel is reporting some sensations of that type in his dreams, and he adds in the last paragraph, quote, "Yesterday I also bought Quest for the Zodiac, so I'm excited to get into that. All the astrological work I've done myself has been using sidereal astrology, so I'm very interested to get to this new perspective," end quote. So I've opened another file in my mail here called Starbase. I'm putting this email in there, and eventually we will compile a list of members of the crew who wish to learn Starbase and put you together by way of linking you through emails. And then we will set up some way in which that group and any other crew members who wish can be informed of their Starbase genotype and of the positions of the apogee and perigee of the moon at their birth, indicating the two strokes of genius, as I've suggested. So that's an onboard task coming up soon, and I look forward to those of you who would like to join in that little project. Here's a pungent message from Stacy expressing her rage at the way that people are so willing to embrace their own enslavement. the slave-love relationship that we see between people and the perpetrators. For instance, that we see in a large part of the population of the United States regarding their beloved leader, the president, is really a symptom of how human beings can exhibit one of their most disgusting tendencies, which is to slavishly adore those who enslave them. And Stacy's just putting out her emotional charge here, expressing how difficult it is and how enraging it is to witness this kind of behavior. Here's a message from Aaron encouraging me to saying that the Channel 16 discussion group is a great idea and that we do indeed need to have some kind of forum for it. He says, quote, "These forums don't create division and distortion as much as they reveal it, giving people who have an inspiring perspective an opportunity to respond with their helpful insights." Positive, end quote. That's a very positive way to view what happens in forums. He also says at the end, please use the Red Ice and Crow House interviews as opportunities to share truth that you have never spoken before, and don't worry about your performance. I'd sooner hear a lousy talk by you than any of the plethora of worthless discourses on, quote, how to succeed by submitting to and furthering an archonic system, end quote. Well, thank you, Aaron, for that lovely, friendly little kick in the ass there. I do enjoy that kind of input from you all whenever it comes my way. Lately, there's a lot of talk and discussion about solar storms and these mass coronal emissions and so forth, and what they're actually doing to us. I have here a link sent by Patricia, who I believe is in Hawaii, regarding the notion that the increased solar emissions may have some effect on the pineal gland. Interesting to speculate on that, but speculations can only get us so far. I'm sure that many of you are aware that I'm a bit overdue on some kind of interpretation of how the sun is playing a role in correction now that pleromic relay is underway. This is something of tremendous importance in our understanding of correction, the astronomical and telluric aspects, as well as the psychological and physiological and physiochemical aspects. Now, I've said something about the solar emissions bleaching out a part of the human species, and I'll repeat that. I think I said it very well at the time. I had one half of my body in the Nahual at the time I was explaining that. And perhaps that accounts for the fact that I did a pretty good job of explaining it. At least I felt I did at the time. Let me just say, if I can paraphrase it now. Consider the human experiment in the planetary laboratory of the Earth like a culture in a Petri dish. Something has gone wrong with the culture. Well, we know that what typically goes wrong with the experiments with the anthropos is that part of the living cells of the culture turn against the rest of the culture, and they turn against the environment. I should say part of the living cells of the plasm turn against the other living cells of the plasm, and then turn against the environment as well. The environment is the culture, speaking in laboratory terms, whether that be a culture of agar-agar or a sugar-based culture or something like that. The Petri dish in which the culture of the anthropos experiment is located is the atmosphere with its four primary components of nitrogen, oxygen, carbon dioxide, and are gone. The rare gas are gone. So there is a problem in the culture and a problem with the germplasm that has been implanted in that culture. And part of the problem is that there is a kind of mold. Some of the germplasm, that is to say, some of the anthropos, some specimens of humanity, have turned into mold. They're not really living human animals anymore. They're just a kind of human mold, which is impeding the other parts of the experiment, which continue to thrive in a healthy way, or relatively healthy way. And so Gaia Sophia is working closely with the sun in order that the massive solar emissions can bleach out the mold and leave the healthy part of the anthropos plasm free to develop and to continue the experiment toward its next phase, which would be anthropos 11 in the next kalpa. Needless to say, those of us who consider ourselves part of this experiment of transspeciation already feel that we are mutating into anthropos 11. Okay. But this mutation is not unimpeded. My ability to go around in the world and express myself as an example of anthropos 11 is impeded and blocked and suffocated by the overwhelming presence of that human mold, which is the useless remnant of anthropos 10. Now, I can't do anything about eliminating the mold, and I have no intention to eliminate the mold. I have intention to eliminate interspecies predators, which is the part of the germplasm of the anthropos that has become toxic and autotoxic. Autotoxic against itself and toxic to the environment. That I can do something about. But in the vast majority of human mold, it's not my business to eliminate. So that is, I believe, what is happening with the close collaboration, if you will, between the planetary animal mother and the intelligence of the sun. She relies upon the sun to handle that part of the cleanup job in these last two centuries of Kali Yuga. Next is an email from Julie F. describing the massive fires in Montana and also in Colorado. And it's somewhat related to my previous words here, because she has noted, as a number of other people who've contacted me, that there's something really unusual about these fires. And even the firefighters on the scene reported that no one had ever seen fire behave in this way before. This is true both of the fires in Montana, her hometown is up in Montana, and those in around Colorado Springs. She observes that it might be worth looking into the connection between electromagnetic energy and fire. She says, quote, "I can't help but think that Gaia Sophia upping her charge and some of her other orchestrations could result in unusual fire behavior. I could be wrong, but is there a connection?" End quote. Well, I think there may well be a connection because, some people are speculating immediately that these fires were not ordinary fires due to the fact that there was some kind of sinister globalist orchestration behind them, that, for instance, the globalists were using electromagnetic devices or directed energy weapons to somehow hype these fires and cause them to behave in a different way than they ordinarily do. That is, of course, possible. We know that the perpetrators do that and that they have these weapons and that they use them and under the guise of natural phenomenon and have done so consistently in the past, that manner of veiling their use of Tesla-like weapons and electromagnetic and ELF weapons and veiling them by natural phenomena is, in fact, the subject of a study of a book by a crew member, Catherine, who's it's written in French. She's just finalizing it right now. A study that would be highly complementary to Judy Wood's work, Where Did the Towers Go? I don't really know what to say. I suspect that certainly massive changes in the electromagnetic field of the Earth could cause a change in the way that fire behaves, but I have no technical understanding of how that would actually be accomplished. Next up is another message from Majel, speaking of his observation of Jupiter and Venus in the morning. And he notes that he also saw intermittent flashes of the other stars. It wasn't the confetti effect, but the fact that I suggested looking for the confetti effect allowed him to make this closer observation than he might perhaps otherwise have made. He says, quote, "It was as if it was a beautiful show. Not only that, but in my line of sight, a small spider was working its web in the corner of the window. Again, I recalled you mentioning Spider Woman in your talk, but I can't recall the context exactly," end quote. This thing about spider web, Spider Woman is coming up, is the Spider Woman archetype, as it were, the Spider Woman motif representing the vibratory field of the planetary animal mother is coming more and more out into the conscious mind. It's emerging, and it will be interesting to watch how that manifests itself in the near future. Majel also notes in his last paragraph, quote, "I am also just finishing reading Ether, God, and Devil, Cosmic Superimposition by Wilhelm Reich. At last I feel I have a clearer understanding of the cause of the collective insanity of humanity, the emotional plague, and it feels like a sense of relief. I also have a clearer understanding of my own life and how my natural essence has been stolen from me. It feels like being released from prison, looking back at what the system has done to you and looking forward to a world you no longer belong to." End quote. Yeah, I'd point out, you know, the emotional plague is a tremendous concept that you find in the writings of Wilhelm Reich. I don't think that you'll find anywhere a particularly definitive cut-and-dry definition of what is the emotional plague. I've looked for it. I hadn't found it in character analysis or in the book that Majel mentions. It might be in the murder of Christ. Anyway, one of the characteristics of the emotional plague is irrationality. Reich was of a Gnostic and Telestic bent of mind, and he had, in fact, a fantastic Telestic talent and sensibility regarding nature. And Reich firmly understood that the human animal is exceptional in the possession of its rational powers. This is the component of dianoia in the sevenfold calibration of the human genome. Dianoia, capacity for rational thought and rational discourse. And the emotional plague is something that happens when emotions go out of control and turn to pathological expressions because they are not restrained and guided by reason and by the rational part of the mind. I find this happening all the time. I see it on the small scale in personal incidents in my life, and I see it, of course, on the large scale. You will almost find no true rational discourse taking place anywhere in the mainstream media, and even very little of it on the alternative media. Unfortunately, a great deal of the internet and the alternative media is irrational and speculative fear-mongering and make-believe, some of it verging into the pathological dimension. The lack of rationality in human beings is painful to behold. And even at my advanced age and in my state of old dog resignation, I still am affected by irrational behavior. For example, how someone will seize upon the smallest incident of something that has offended them or upset them and blow that incident completely out of proportion and then build a number of irrational arguments based on this overblown incident. I see this happening all the time. Part of our rational capacity is exhibited in the image of the scales and the balance. That means to make the balance of things, you know. To make the balance of things. If you can't make the balance in your affairs with other people, you can't be rational with them, you know. If you and I have a perfectly good relationship and there's a good exchange and sharing of our talents, and then I spill some spaghetti sauce on, you know, the sleeve of your shirt, and you go into an hysterical fit about that, that means that you're not making the balance, you know. If a little spaghetti sauce on the sleeve of your shirt puts your relationship to me in jeopardy, then you're not making the right balance between what we have in our relationship. And I find this happening all the time with people, all the time. And that is an example of the emotional plague. Next comes another message from Julie F., describing her experience in a sweat lodge in Montana and how she had a visitation from a big white owl. It appears that at that time she got some instructions. Sweat lodges are great places to receive Dakini instruction. Quote, I won't go into details of exactly what I was asking about in the dark, but it was about ancient ways in Kala Tantra. You're the first one that came to my mind when I saw the owl, so I figured everything was fine, but things are also going to change a lot. I asked myself the same question, where are the men? And all I can do is continue self-correction and keep calling them. Some will get on Channel 16, but I already know it's mostly women, end quote. On that note, though, I must say that men are starting, the call is out with the omen of deliverance now in effect since July 4th. Men are signing in now. Men are identifying themselves in the crew, those who are already there and those who wish to join, such as this brief email from Kirk. Hi, my name is Kirk. I took the vow with VV in February with my friend Stephanie. I would at this time like to make application to sign on as a crew member. I am one of the men that you have been asking to step forward. So here we go. This is a really good sign. And perhaps there will be some way to organize that side of the Gaian Warrior crew in the coming months. By that I mean the male component of the Gaian Warrior crew. Here's a short email from Tove in England saying that she's decided to rejoin the experiment after some lapse of time. She says, quote, the other day I saw in the sky a cloud which was very strange, like waves upside down. Have never seen that before. Also have been sensing sparkles. I just felt them, but I don't see them, end quote. Well, you know, I probably need to do a talk on chemtrails and so that I can further elucidate my proposed distinction between phenomena that are happening in the atmosphere by human induction and those which are due to Sophia herself. Like right now, for instance, I mean, you wouldn't believe what I'm doing right now. I'm standing in the window of the grenier, the attic where I write. I'm looking out over the flat farm fields of Belgium. There is the most beautiful summer wheat in the fields. It has the color of a very, very light buff color or a very, very light taupe. And it's just absolutely glorious, welcoming color. Very, very soft and gentle. There's also another field across the way where they've planted linen. I bicycled through there the other day. And it was, again, something that you see in this very humble and homely part of the world, where you are close to the earth, close to the smell of the earth, something that you see when you are under the skies of the lowlands, a certain kind of ambient texture in the light. The color of the young fields of linen is like a luminescent pea green. Now, when this linen blossoms, it has a beautiful, deep magenta color, and it waves like a tapestry, like a silk. The whole top of the field waves like a thin blanket of silk of the color of magenta. But right now, before these colors come out, each stalk of the linen has a tiny little perfect green sphere on it, like a pale pea. And this field of linen gives off the color of luminescent pea green, light pea green. Very, very beautiful, subtle colors in the landscape here. But what you would be amazed at is the sky. I'm looking north, and about northeast from here, about 20 miles, is Zaventem Airport, Brussels International Airport. It's 11 o'clock in the morning here, or is it 10? It's 10 o'clock in the morning. The local church bell just chimed, and there is not one single trace of anything in the sky. The sky is a perfectly clear, cloudless blue, like the blue of cornflower blue or robin's egg blue. And there is not a trace of anything in the sky at all. And I need to recount at some other time the experience I had here this summer, one morning around the same time. In that experience, I saw about 10 different airplanes, 10 different jet planes in the sky. Right now, I don't see any, which is very unusual, because I am close to an international airline hub. And they were all flying through a sky like the one I'm looking at now. They were perfect little darts. Each one of them had a little pinstripe contrail behind it. In some cases, the contrails were very short. In some cases, the contrails were longer. But they were not dissipating in the manner that chemtrails are said to behave. And I observed on that day in the summer at my visit here, on one occasion, I observed probably 10 or 12 of these planes going on their usual flight paths, which have to be rigorously controlled, of course, so they don't run into each other. That was about 10 in the morning. Not a chemtrail in sight. About 10:30 in the morning, chemtrails, or what are considered to be chemtrails, started to appear. And within 15 or 20 minutes, the entire sky was crisscrossed with these long plumes that were feathering out, as they typically do, from one side and spreading across the sky. And then within, here's a jet going now. Here's a jet. It's probably the jet that I take of the Brussels-Malaga flight. It's going right over the house. In fact, I can look down on the house. It's so low that it has no contrail, of course. I can see it perfectly clearly going over me right now. So anyway, on that occasion, I saw before my eyes, in a matter of less than half an hour, a massive covering of the sky by these plumes. And eventually, quite quickly, not eventually, the sky became milky white. Now, how's that possible? How's that possible in the proximity of a major international air hub? I mean, if The passenger planes I saw at 10 o'clock were not emitting aerosols that were deposited in the fuel. Then how come all the planes I observed 20 minutes later were? And if they were not commercial planes emitting this aerosol, then what kind of planes were they? Were they military planes? How would it be possible to launch 8 or 10 military planes at a peak hour when commercial traffic was arriving and departing over Brussels Airport? It just doesn't make any sense. So we have to be extremely careful about assuming that everything we see in the sky that is attributed to human-made geoengineering is what we think it is. Just last week, I got an email with photographs sent by Dominique from Peru. He's up there in the sacred valley of the Incas near Machu Picchu. Sent me this photograph of parallel bands across the sky, which look exactly like chemtrails. But he noted that there were no airplanes visible before, during, or after the formation of these bands. So it's a lot to be learned here, folks, and those of us in the Gaia Navigation Experiment are in a privileged position to be observing things with an understanding that the Earth is a living entity and the atmosphere itself is alive. And some of what we are seeing in the atmosphere is evidence of what the Earth herself is doing. We stand in the privileged position to make those observations. So please do so on whatever occasion that you can. Here's a link sent by Dame Miriam to a NASA clip in which they provide some lovely photography of the Venus-Jupiter-Pleiades alignment. So I'll put that link into GaiaSpore.org so you can click it up if you want to. Generally, I don't pay any attention to anything that comes from NASA. But on this occasion, they are making a big deal of watching the morning sky in July for the Venus-Jupiter action. And they do have some lovely photographs of it if you want to take a look at that. Another email from Dame Miriam points out the same thing that was, same question that was raised regarding the Colorado fires. It looks like a directed energy weapon could be in use, ? For what purpose, I don't know, to destroy info, threaten the military base at Colorado Springs, by the cabal, against the cabal, too many questions there. In any case, this is an interesting article on the possibility that those fires at Colorado Springs were not just ordinary fires. Here's a brief message from Jordan suggesting that the word purpose could be used interchangeably with the word beauty. Quote, I just wanted to say how I have readjusted the syntax for myself to apply my new beautyless perception, end quote. By that, it's a reference to seeing the meaninglessness of beauty as we are told what beauty should be in our current culture. The message goes on, quote, so far I have chosen to replace your use of beauty with the word purpose. You cannot become anything but more purposeful. Feels much more grounding to me. Even more so, the epithet for the human species, killed by the failure to observe purpose, is a much more meaningful statement that swims chills to my belly. To not observe the purpose of every iota of this superorganism we're part of, why, that would be a very short life indeed, end quote. Well, I agree there's some validity in the interchangeability of these words, but I would also point out that the more closely and more passionately you observe the purpose of every iota of this superorganism, the more you become aware that how beauty operates in her purposes and how all her purposes are aimed to beauty. So have it either way. It comes down to the same experience. Here's a message from Steve in the U.S. It gives a wonderful example of how the encompassing framework of of this experiment, the encompassing imaginative framework of correction, pleromic relay, and so forth, gives each of you in your specific locale on the earth the opportunity to make observations that you would not otherwise make. That tells me that the experiment is really working. The experiment is truly voracious. Steve writes, quote, the anomaly being tracked by suspicious observers, which I also have been following for quite some time, may be tracking Gaia Sophia's communications with the Pleroma. With all of this going on, that could be considered negative. I feel a great deal of excitement. The 2-Minute News has reported over 750 earthquakes, suggesting magma flows just in the last 4 days. A couple of other observations that you may find interesting. The Gulf Stream has stopped flowing in the Gulf of New Mexico, and our winds here in Missouri have been easterly more times than not recently. In over 50 years of living here, easterly winds are rare and used to be associated with bad storms, although now we haven't had rain in weeks. I guess I'm writing to let you know that I think you are right on. These observations I see are in-your-face kind of things. These are tremendous things that are happening right now. I would like to say happening in real time, but it feels like time itself is changing. I don't pretend to have any special knowledge or understanding. For God's sakes, I'm just a poor hillbilly living in the woods. But things are speeding up, and I think it's going to be a heck of a ride. I look forward to your next briefing and just want you to know that you are appreciated. Your friend and faithful observer of our goddess, Steve. So you see how beautiful this is, that the framework of this experience, the visionary and imaginative perspective of the Sophianic wisdom makes observations like this possible. And this is what it really means to live on a planet, you know? I was thinking the other day about the analogy of the Earth to a pleasure cruiser or a massive ship. If you've ever been on any one of these massive passenger vessels, you know that some of the rooms are along the hull of the vessel, the outer hull, and they have small portals so you can look out at the sea. But many of the rooms have no windows at all. Well, most people living today live in the personal reality of cabins below deck, which have no windows. They fill these cabins with personal memorabilia and whatever else they need to distract themselves. Maybe they live there in squalid situations with their families. All families are pretty squalid, as far as I can tell. And, of course, they have all their iconic devices to entertain them and distract them and help them pass the time of day. And they could live and die in these cabins below deck, these windowless cabins, and never know that they were sailing on a massive vessel over the high seas. When you enter the Gaia navigation experiment, it's as if you have a stateroom with a picture window looking out to the sea and looking out to the islands and atolls and lagoons and the skies above, the sea, and everything to be seen as the great vessel sails on through cosmic space. So here is our friend Steve, a poor hillbilly living in the woods of Missouri, but he has a stateroom view of the journey of the planetary mothership. On a completely different note, here's a message from George saying, Ahoy, Nav. David Icke is now repeating the Gnostic mythos along with the Archons and Hypatia. He is giving this information in the correct context that the Gnostics hold our true history and creation story. He is putting the Archons in the context of the true tricksters and parasites of man. Of course, he gives no credit to the main Turton, but hey, at least he is bringing the information to his audiences. End quote. Well, there you go, and that's fine, and I expect more of the same. But, you know, people can pick up and absorb the Sophia mythos in any way they wish, and they can pilfer bits and pieces of it, as some people do, such as I won't mention any names. And that's fine too. But there's nothing like living totally and integrally in the story with the totality of the story. The real power of the story, as I've said before, is that everyone carries the whole story. Whereas in the conventional forms of New Age spiritual awakening, propounded by David Icke and others, people are encouraged to think that they all have clues to the big picture. And they have, as it were, pieces of a massive jigsaw puzzle. But that is not the case, as you know, in the telestic vision. You do not have pieces of the puzzle. You have the entire puzzle and the entire plot. And it propagates itself fractally among the people who live it in that way. Next, a message from Kim, who encountered a female black panther as a power animal. There's a long description of this visionary dream. And then there's a quote. I found this quote. I have no way of knowing where I found, where it comes from. The quote is, "The age of innocence is over. The witches of old must walk the earth again to battle the enemy or die trying," end quote. Next is a little note from myself, where I found a YouTube clip that's entitled "Toys for Touching - Untouchable in Recession." And the subject of this YouTube clip is sex toys. The clip points out that sex toys have been around for more than a century. They show an early model of a vibrator. Vibrators came in pretty much when electricity came in. They came in before pop-up toasters. And it turns out that the industry is impenetrable in the times of economic downturn. So there's a big business right now in sex toys and toys for touching yourself sexually. Now, what does that tell you in regard to what some of us have been feeling since the spring? Certainly in the collective where people are living in the mold, not to say that they are the mold they're living in, which would be probably more accurate, living in the mold of their lack of sensitivity and the degeneration of all their senses. And yet they feel the same craving arising, and the way that they choose to satisfy it is by putting out money to buy sex toys. So sex and pornography are subjects that belong properly to the realm of Kala Tantra, and maybe at some point I'll get a chance to sound off about those, but I wouldn't count on it. Next up, a long email from Ryan entitled "Pink Sun," and this describes experiences and impressions upon doing the Gayan Tantric vow near Mount Rainier in Washington State. Very beautiful letter with a lot of vivid, vivid description of taking the vow. And I can't recount any of this because of the time, but I will say that I read these emails in detail, and not a single word you write is wasted on me. So any accounts that you have of this experience are valuable to the navigator. Next, a message from Emmanuel saying that, quote, "Responding to your call about white animal totems, and now I haven't seen one in the flesh in a while, and not since last August up in Anthem, Arizona. But the first night after reading your post in a vision journey, a very lucid, detailed white rabbit appeared, and then again in the early a.m. of the new moon in another vision." So, again, I get reports weekly about these power animals appearing either in dreams or in nature, and very often in close association with taking the Gayan Tantric vow. Yet another email from Dame Miriam saying that she felt moved to do a courting for the healing of the gender rift. And she feels that this is particularly pertinent at this time. I would agree. The healing of the gender rift and our memory of the true origins of the gender rift is intimately related to the current moment of correction. Why is that so? Well, it's because at the convergence of the South Lunar Node with Jupiter, which occurred in June, as pleromic relay came into play, there is an indication in that convergence. There's an indication that we've reached the point in Sophia's awakening when her memory and ours would run in a parallel circuit. By ours, I mean those of us who follow her dream, but also, in a certain respect, the collective memory of humanity. Of course, the collective memory of humanity is buried by a lot of interference and a lot of lies. We are not allowed to remember our true history. We as a species have been deprived of the natural continuity of our own experience by the predators. One of their great tactics of mind control is to tell us lies about what happened in our past and screw our minds and memories in such a way that we cannot remember and retrieve what actually happened. But with the convergence of Jupiter into the South Lunar Node, you could say we are looking at a possible reversal of this process and a vast resurgence of what I have called for many years now the phylogenetic memories of the Anthropos. If that were to be the case, it would mean that with a huge sense of relief, we would begin to remember how we actually fell into the gender rift, how we fell into biological procreation. And this would come vividly and uniquely to those in Planetary Tantra and the Gaian Navigation Experiment, but it also might come, it might bleed through into the consciousness of some other human animals as well. So this is something we can look for and anticipate now and in the coming months. I suspect that there will be a great deal of evidence forthcoming of what I'm saying here. Now, just to wind up this session in the mailroom with a couple of other instances, I have a link here to an article, Study of Angry Mice Could Find Drugs to Prevent Pathological Rage. Quote, shutting down a brain receptor in mice, a receptor that also exists in humans, can block pathological rage, a new study shows. We didn't realize that mice could experience pathological rage, but stopping it and the impulsive violence that could result would be a way to treat the types of aggression that are common in some neurological and psychological disorders in people. End quote. Well, we see here another obvious ploy of the predators and their scientific minions who are going to I wish them luck. They're going to try to block the pathological rage of the human species. Well, they don't have the chance of a rat in a maze of doing that. And you can see how desperate they are if they think that feeding people chemicals and turning down brain receptors is going to save them from the wave of pathological rage that is currently rising like a tsunami across this planet. And that wave will rise and that wave will break, and there is no way that the perpetrators can impede it from doing so. At least that's my humble opinion. Finally, here's a short message from Jason on Relay, and in this message he quotes someone on the subject of the ether in ancient Hindu philosophy, and he cites a text of the 9th century which uses the word akasha. Now, the Sanskrit word akasha is probably the equivalent to our word ether, and it explains that ether is the fifth element, and it is the one that is connected to the medium of sound. It can be detected through sound, but is inaccessible to the other senses. And he notes, it's notable to say that if the operations of ether can be understood, the theory of relativity and the false world of science, as it has been wrought, would crumble. Well, certainly, and even if the true meaning of Akasha could be understood now that pleromic relay is underway, it would certainly even change our conception of Akasha and change our conception of ether. The problem of ether, what is defined by ether in a cosmological sense, is a huge issue in cosmology. I would like to say that the plasma scientists could solve that for us and present a better syntax, but they haven't done that yet. Just want to conclude with the observation about the plasma cosmology. There was a big Electric Universe Plasma Cosmology conference in the spring, and I took it to be a good sign that science is moving out of the old paradigms of Planck and Einstein and the ridiculous narcissistic musings of people like Stephen Hawking and the mathematical manias that pretend to be scientific, that we're moving away from all this. All these archonic systems are breaking down. And perhaps a new physics is emerging. Electric universe theory and plasma cosmology could be the spearhead of that new physics. I indicated that in Not in His Image 5 years ago. Plasma cosmology moves science in the direction of the Sophianic vision. But so far the plasma cosmologists are not, they're not delivering the goods. They're getting off to a really faulty start. Their nomenclature, their syntax is inadequate. They do not have a solid grasp of how to mythology or how to work with mythology. So far I'm not thrilled by what they're doing. But if we're going to look in the conventional world of science for any kind of breakthrough, that's the only possible place that it could happen. So I hope that we see a better performance from them in the near future. So on that note, I'm going to close this session in the mailroom to be followed up by a third session later on today. And I wish you all safe passage and all the excitement that this great adventure can bring.